Exception number 9474, Reel 7.
Mr. George Harbottle, Reel 7. I wonder if you could tell me what happened when you got to Arras in April 1917.
At that point, the quartermaster, Captain McGoran, went home, not on grounds of ill health, but he'd been out a long time and he was getting up in years, and I think they decided he'd had enough and he should be sent home. And so as a temporary measure, they put Captain Bell in as an acting quartermaster, although he knew nothing about it, and Freddie Byrne, who was the regimental quartermaster sergeant, was promoted to be acting quartermaster, and actually he was a quartermaster and did all the work of a quartermaster, but he required a regimental quartermaster sergeant to do the work that he would otherwise have done, which was quite an important factor, because we had to keep in close touch with ASC in regard to rations. We had to keep in close touch with the engineering people in the direction of supplies, and that was done by the regimental quartermaster sergeant, and I used to therefore have to ride to the back area and keep in touch with these various people and with the pay office as well. That meant a certain amount of riding to and fro.
So you were given this position?
And I was given that position as acting regimental quartermaster sergeant.
Could you go through the responsibilities and duties in a little more detail? How did you link up with the Army Service Corps?
Well, the Army Service Corps had headquarters in the vicinity of Division. The director of engineering supplies also were at Division, and the pay office for the Division was also there, and these were people that we as a battalion had to keep in touch with. And so I was given the duty of doing that.
What sort of details would you organise, would you sort out with these people?
Checking numbers and seeing that we were getting the right sort of thing in the way of rations, and if there were any complaints about the quality of what we were getting, here was an opportunity of doing it. I was the person that did all that. The question of your pay strength, your fighting strength, and all the rest, all that information had to be fed to the different people.
Well, going through those, were you getting enough of everything? Was there any problem? Did you have to take action?
Very little in the way of problem. The rations were coming up in accordance with the numbers that were given to them, and we didn't find much trouble with them.
What about the quality? You say
quality for what it was worth. That was reasonable. Of course, the thing that we always lacked was fruit. But they did give us dates, which were the most appalling things. They'd come in sandbags, and you can imagine what dates in sandbags were like. We didn't want them.
Would they be eaten by the troops, or would they just throw them away?
Oh, I don't know. A lot of them got thrown away. I believe the horses ate them.
Now, you'd spend a lot more of your time now back at divisional.
Yes. Well, at the transport lines, the battalion transport lines, but working from there backwards instead of working from there frontwards.
So, were you given any means of transport? Because divisional headquarters would presumably be...
Oh, yeah, I was allowed to use the quartermaster's horse, which is fortunately a docile beast. I'd never had any riding instruction.
Now, how you've told us, we know what the quartermaster sergeant did, the company quartermaster sergeant, yeah. And what the regimental quartermaster sergeant. Yeah. How did the quartermaster fit into this, the actual officer position, or in this case, regimental quartermaster sergeant was doing? What would the quartermaster do? What were his responsibilities?
He was responsibility for allocating everything he got into the different companies in the battalion.
And that was his main job?
That was his main job.
Well, why was that so onerous, difficult?
Oh, well, that wasn't very difficult. As a matter of fact, he had a storeman who did most of the job.
Why couldn't the officer then... The officer who was put in and who didn't know anything about was he just useless in other ways, or was it too how?
Well, no, he was a good rugby player, but he wasn't much of an officer. He was a very charming character, and I think they put him there because he wasn't so much good in the line.
He was a bit ineffectual.
Yes.
How long did you do these duties as regimental quartermaster sergeant?
Not more than about a month, because I was going for a commission.
Well, you decided to go for a commission again. What made you decide that?
It was decided for me. There were two of us who were given the application form for commission. I think it was MT393, but I wouldn't be sure of the number. But I simply got a chit from the adjutant saying, you will fill in this form and return it to me. And the Lewis gun sergeant, Gordon Hunter, got the same chit. And he said, hey, he said, what do you think about this? Well, I said... the brigadier always asks you if you want to, if you'll have to go before the brigadier, and you can tell him you don't want a commission. And I said, I shall tell him the same thing.
Why weren't you keen on a commission then?
Well, I'd been 2.5 years in that battalion. I knew the remnants that were there. I was in a reasonably cushy job, which I thought I was entitled to after 2 years on the Western Front. As Freddie Byrne said to me, Freddie Byrne was the regimental quartermaster sergeant who was put in as acting quartermaster. He said, you know, you applying for a commission, he said, you want your brains examining. He said, what are you going to do? He said, you've got a reasonable job here, people you know, he said, you're going to become a second lieutenant in a wicked, noisy, dangerous, rattly unit like a machine gun corps. He said, you're mad. Well, they are, you see.
What changed your mind? What was the next? You were ordered to fill this.
I wanted to fill that in, and I filled it in, saying as detailed.
And what was the next stage?
Well, the next stage we were going before the brigadier.
And what happened at that interview?
Well, now one of the officers, Captain Anderson, was now brigade major. He had been a second lieutenant and survived St. Julian and had been our company commander at A Company for a short time. But he was going up on promotion. He was a very capable man. He was Anderson and Garland, the local stage agent, auctioneers here. He saw that we had come up for commissions, and he got hold of Hunter and me, and he said, "I'm delighted that you're coming up for your commissions." I said, "Well, I don't want a commission." And Hunter said, "Well, I don't either." He said, "Look here," and he told us exactly what he thought about us. He said, "Here we are, we're short of decent officers, especially junior ones." And he said, "Here are you, a couple of experienced NCOs who ought to have had commissions long before." And he said, "Now you're coming up." And he said, "You jolly well get one." And he made us feel that we were absolute scrimshankers if we didn't take it. So we sent docile before the brigadier, and he said, "You want a commission?" And you said, "Yes, sir."
What else happened? When you met the brigadier, what did he say? Did he...
Oh, he was a bit of an old woman. He just asked you a question. "You want a commission?" "Yes." "What unit do you want to go to?" "Yes." "Right, next."
Did he? What unit did you say you wanted to go to? Did you have an idea?
I had no idea until we decided we were going for one, and my friend Gordon Hunter from Whitley Bay, who'd been with me all the time and was the Lewis Gun Sergeant at headquarters, knew all about machine guns, been in the machine gun section from the word go. He was going to the machine gun corps, so I want to go to the machine gun corps. And you couldn't get to the machine gun corps unless you got a special recommendation. And so I went to when we came away from there, I went to see Major Anderson, and I said, "Now look, sir, you've got me into this trouble." I said, "You've got to write a recommendation for the machine gun corps for me. Otherwise, I won't be able to get in." Well, he said, "Now," I said, "this is going to be a bit of a problem. How much do you know about a machine gun?" I said, "Nothing." He said, "All right. Well, I'll put you in charge of the machine gun divisional machine gun NCO." And he said, "He will instruct you in machine gunnery so that when you go, if anyone raises any questions, you'll know the gun." So, all right, I said, "That's a bargain." So with that, we went to the machine gun corps.
What training did did you get locally then? What were you shown about the machine gun before you went?
Oh, just stripping the gun, how it fired, the how the lock worked. Which is the main thing. That's the thing that goes backwards and forwards, all the tactics of a machine gun. That's all.
Did that take you long?
No. Oh no, I knew the system. It was only a question of knowing the details of the gun that I didn't know.
So you were a familiar
water cooled gun, you see.
So, at any time during this. As when you were going to, you know, going for your commission, were you ever assessed on the grounds of your social suitability for a commission? Do you think that was a factor, that you had a good background, or?
I think that the adjutant and the company commander and the colonel would know perfectly well what my background was, and therefore they knew they could recommend me.
Do you think that came into the decision as to whether you were suitable to be an officer, besides your experience and your obvious capability?
I think it had its point. Well, if I'd been a complete oaf, I don't think they would have, however experienced I was, I don't think they would have put me forward for a commission, because I wouldn't have gone down with the men.
What was Hunter's background like? Gordon
Hunter? He'd been at a grammar school locally, and was a very cultured individual.
So it was of importance in deciding?
I think it probably had its side.
So what was the next stage then? After you'd had your informal training with the battalion on the machine gun, and the colonel had recommended you for
That was merely done pending the request for coming from division.
So what date were you posted away back?
February, March. End of February, I should say, 1916. No, wait a bit. Am I not getting ahead of things here? It wasn't until 1917 that I went for the commission.
That's right. Yes, that's where we are.
And that's where we are. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we'd.
Said you'd moved up to Arras.
We came up from Arras.
That was in April 1917. You said you moved there.
In April. It was round Easter. It was Easter. It was certainly Easter, because we marched up there in filthy conditions.
Was it? Did you leave the battalion before the Arras offensive? Before the attack?
No, the Arras offensive was in progress when I left.
Well, that dates it near enough. So, what happened then?
Then I was simply sent home, and that would be in April. It would be in April
17.
Yes.
And where were you sent back to then?
I was sent back to home. I was simply ordered return home, and I would receive notification where to report. And as soon as I got home, I received notification that I was to attend at Grantham, report at Grantham in uniform, and they gave me the date, which was the beginning of May.
So, when you reported, what reception were you given on reporting to Grantham?
I got the shock of my life. We were all told that when we went for a commission, you got a month's leave. No damn month's leave with a machine gun call. They said, you report here tomorrow, and we'll... they had about 50 recruits that were going to be cadets, but instead of being cadets, they took us there. They took all our regimental badges off, gave us machine gun corps badges, all our stripes or crowns or anything were taken off us. And we were simply put onto the square in squads to do squad drill. They put us into huts. Three planks on a little trestle, and that's what you slept on. And all your equipment was hanging up on the on hooks. And every morning, when you got up, your blankets, there were three brown blankets, they had to be rolled meticulously and you had to be able to, when they were rolled, or you had to be able to put a pencil down against each of them, and not one of them had to be fitted, not missing. They tried to crime you on anything. It was really to sort out those that couldn't stand the the racket they were giving you. And by gum, the squad drill on that square with the new guards' good step and all the rest of it, it was really a means of getting rid of half a dozen or so that they didn't, that were excess to their numbers. And if you weren't absolutely top class on every little detail, you're out.
How did you react to that? Because you were used, you were a regimental quartermaster sergeant, no rank.
I knew what they were after, and I batted accordingly. I knew what they were doing. But some of them, they couldn't stand it. However...
did it annoy you at all? Or did?
No, that's all. You didn't get annoyed with that sort of thing in the war.
How long did this period of tough treatment last?
3 weeks.
What were the people like who fell out? Can you describe?
There was. I think there were only two in our squad.
How big was your
and,
squad?
One of them was a great big lumbery chap. I don't know why they'd ever put him in. I think I'd have put him out straight away. But all the rest stood up to it. There were, of course, we did have one or two that were virtually schoolboy age, and they didn't take kindly to it, because they'd come from a school cadet corps or something of that kind, and they thought this sort of thing was bloody awful.
What mix of people did you have in your group squad?
Oh, we had quite a mixture. We had the experienced NCOs from abroad. We had some who were merely barely NCOs, hadn't had the same experience that we'd had. There were some which came from recommended from recent call-ups, you see, of the 18-year-old class. So there was quite a variety.
What were they from a mixed social background as well?
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, they were all, virtually all of them were quite well-educated people. They were all, I mean, grammar school type, or public, there were a few public school type. But, yes, socially they were a pretty reasonable lot.
How did you get on between the different groups? I'm thinking of between the experienced NCOs like yourself and the you mentioned NCOs who were barely NCOs.
Yes.
Was there any friction, between any of the groups?
No friction at all. We're all on the same thing, and we all knew what we were trying to do. Subsequently, we used to pull the leg of some of these youngers who were in such an awful panic and sweat about getting through the exams they gave to us. We knew the exams weren't worth anything, in fact, we knew all the answers anyway. We never bothered about working for any exams because there was we knew the answers just as well as the person that were putting them.
Did some of the younger cadets look, or members of the squad, did they look up to you as old soldiers? Would they come and ask you?
They did, in a way. Yes, they used to ask us questions, and we used to cheer them on, tell them don't need to worry their heads like the way they were doing. Oh yes, and they were all, but they were all a very friendly lot together.
But moving on from the sort of your actual squad, who was it who was training you? Were you trained by other NCOs or were you trained by officers?
There wasn't any training really. It was merely sort of squad drill, and moving as a company and moving in line and all this sort of thing.
Who would be giving the commands?
They're senior NCOs. A good many of them old soldiers, old regular soldiers. Some of them, the top one was a regimental drill instructor, you see, and various of that type. But they were good chaps. They were fine old regular soldiers.
But they were too old to serve.
They were either invalided out or regarded as being too old.
What about your actual training in the machine gun?
We didn't. No, at that point, we were only at Grantham for 3 weeks on squad drill. And then we were sent to the cadet battalion at Bisley.
I see. So at this point, at Grantham, you only did this clearing
squad
out.
Squad drill, nothing else.
Part of your testing for officers.
That's right.
So you were then sent on, that would be May, in June, was it, 1970?
That would be the beginning of June. To Bisley, and we had to get officer's uniform, but without any badges.
You still weren't commissioned, in other words?
We weren't commissioned, no. We were just cadets, and a white band on our hats, and we were sent off to Bisley. And the whole time we were at Bisley, we never saw a machine gun.
When you got to Bisley, you said you were in the cadet battalion. What was its actual name, the battalion you were sent to? Or was it just the cadet battalion, the machine gun corps?
It was the MGC cadet battalion number 1 and cadet battalion number 2.
Which one were you in?
Number 1.
And how many would there be in the cadet battalion?
I should say there would be about 40.
So when they called it a battalion,
it a battalion, but in actual fact, you're in two companies of 20 apiece, roughly 20.
Were they designated A and B or anything?
There'd be A and B, I think. But you were done in alphabetical order, so that you were down to about H, and then on to down to Z.
Did you stay with you? Were you still with your friend Gordon Hunter, or had you been separated?
No, we were together because we were both H.
Now, while you were at Bisley, you said you never saw a machine gun. Can you tell me exactly what was happening at Bisley then? What you were being
at Bisley? We were doing infantry training. They gave us the full training of an infantry officer and made us into infantry officers before we were allowed to touch a machine gun.
Now, can you take me through what that was? What sort of things were you taught as an infantry officer there?
We were taught the handling of squads. I should have said to you in that earlier, when we were on the squad drill at Grantham, they took us out in front of an officer and made us drill the squads. That was a bit of an ordeal. That was pretty difficult. If you got him on the if you did a left turn on a wrong foot, it upsets the thing. You see, you've got to watch your feet. But that was
so you were doing more of that.
Yes.
At
it was so